It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll catch up on news in Wisconsin this week, from the latest on the state's controversial voter ID law to a march for immigration reform in Milwaukee.
First, in 2012, Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan released a budget as chairman of the House Budget Committee that included a major scale back of social programs in the U.S., which was passed by the House. In justifying the cuts, Ryan cited his Catholic values.
That summer, a group of Roman Catholic nuns set out on a bus from Iowa to Virginia to rally support against that budget and to emphasize the social service work that the church supports.
The leader of the Nuns on a Bus campaign is Sister Simone Campbell. She's the executive director of Network, a nonprofit Catholic social justice lobby.
Sister Simone recently published her account of the campaign and her life's work. It's called A Nun on the Bus: How All of Us Can Create Hope, Change, and Community. Sister Simone, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, it's great to be with you.
Well, let's go back to 2012. You weren't a stranger at that point to activism, but you set out on that Nuns on the Bus campaign in part in response, as we said, to Congressman Paul Ryan's budget. What was it about that budget proposal that led you to set out on that tour?
Well, Paul Ryan's budget emphasized the cutting of social services in the United States, cutting money to good programs, because he claimed that our country just couldn't afford it, while at the same time shifting money to the top. And what a lot of people didn't know was that the money that he wanted to cut was the cornerstone of a lot of the programs that Catholic Sisters run around the country. So what we wanted to do was to say it was the wrong choice for our nation, to say that it's about 100%, it's not just about those at the top, and to lift up our sisters who do such amazing work with such little money. They really take federal money and leverage it to make great programs.
A lot of people might issue a press release, maybe write an op-ed. Why hop on a bus and hit the road?
Well, we also had a lot of notoriety at the time because our little organization of 9 full-time staff had been mentioned by the Vatican as being a bad influence on Catholic Sisters. And so with all that press attention, we said it's not about us. It's about the people we serve. So what we tried to do was to go around and to shine a light on the folks that we serve. Too often we get into, you know, I work in D.C., so we get into this theoretical conversation and people lose track of the fact that they are real people with real stories, struggling hard every day. And it was those folks that we wanted to put at the center of concern. So a bus is a perfect way to do it.
You mentioned that statement from the Vatican. Also, some bishops in the U.S. were not wild about the work Network was doing, and in their response to your bus tour, the accusation was you're highlighting some issues related to poverty and social services, and yet not tackling issues also important to the Catholic Church, things like abortion, accusing you of having kind of an a la carte approach to promoting Catholic values. How did you respond to that?
Well, basically what we said was we were founded on to fight for the issues of economic justice in our society, and there's a lot of other organizations that do the single focus, different single focus from us. So we think we're totally within keeping of the church. I also might say that we're Pope Francis since then has said the very same thing, that it's a question of addressing different issues at different times. And our organization, Network, is all about economic justice. That's our mission. That's our agenda.
I wanted to ask you about that change from Pope Benedict to Pope Francis. Do you feel like the attitude toward your organization in particular and to people with the same mission as you has changed?
I think in some way it has, in some with some of our leadership. In 2012, we didn't have any bishops come to any of our events. But in 2013, we went out on a bus trip to really work hard for immigration reform, comprehensive immigration reform. And at 5 different events, local bishops came, other bishops issued letters of welcome. So I think Pope Francis has kind of set free a broader view of what justice is about these days and kind of freed some of our leadership from the fear that they had of other bishops turning them in or being negative about their perspective. So I hold some hope on this.
And Pope Francis has gotten a lot of positive press around the world, especially in liberal circles. What overall effect does that have on the work that you do?
Well, just this week, Pope Francis's folks who do the tweeting, though it's, I understand he always approves it, took a point from the Joy of the Gospel, his document from November, where it says economic inequality is the source of all social evil. I mean, that is huge to have that pointed out so directly, just as our Congress is considering huge tax cuts for what are called tax extenders for these extremely wealthy companies, some of whom have not paid any taxes at all. And so I must say that I think Pope Francis is really lifting up this issue of economic inequality in a way that is capturing the imagination, giving hope, and a fair amount of joy that we can be in this together. It's wonderful.
Now, you've been directly critical of Republican Congressman Paul Ryan and others. You've spoken at the Democratic National Convention. I've seen a line of argument that goes, yes, as a nun, great work against poverty, work to relieve poverty, but you're crossing a line by taking, in effect, a partisan stance here.
Well, the fact is that if we're going to work at the heart of where these decisions are made in politics, then we have to be political. But I do describe myself as an equal opportunity annoyer. I annoy the administration. I annoy Democrats. Maybe not quite as much as I annoy Republicans, but we certainly spend a fair amount of time annoying both of our parties, or all three of our parties at this point. But I think the important thing is to stay focused on mission. Our mission is to lift up the needs of those who live at the economic margins of our society. That's our mission, and I'll go wherever that takes, including the Democratic Convention, which was an effort to bring the stories of the people we had met on the bus to that arena, and those stories would not have been there but for my speaking. So I was glad to bring my people along. That's what I'm about.
We're speaking with Sister Simone Campbell, Executive Director of NETWORK. That's a not-for-profit Catholic social justice lobby. She launched the Nuns on the Bus campaign back in 2012, reacting to Paul Ryan's 2012 budget. Since then, they've gone on the road talking about immigration and other issues. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're back with Sister Simone Campbell, Executive Director of NETWORK, a not-for-profit Catholic social justice lobby. She launched the Nuns on the Bus campaign against Paul Ryan's 2012 budget. Her new book is called A Nun on the Bus, How All of Us Can Create Hope, Change, and Community.
And we'll take your calls in just a few moments at 800-642-1234. Sister Simone, let's get back to the bus tour in 2012 and the ones since, as you go from town to town. What is the reaction you get from the people you meet, liberals and conservatives?
Well, I must say that the reaction we received was so positive. I will never forget when we pulled into Janesville and there were like 350 people there by Paul Ryan's office to welcome us and to support us. I had expected maybe more negative pushback. I think there were three protesters, but the 350 positive supporters were just overwhelming. And they said that the reason so many folks came out was that they were really concerned that we were losing our sense of community, just what you were talking about during the pledge break, that really it's all of us together making the best of our nation, and that the Paul Ryan budget was really wanting to divide us again, shift more money to the top, cut out safety net programs for folks who had fallen on hard times in a tough economy. And they thought that was the wrong way forward. So it was a great reception. It was really exciting.
Do you feel like as a nun, maybe some people who wouldn't normally listen to a more liberal message might listen to you?
Well, I just try to talk common sense. And while I think maybe it carries a bit more weight just because I don't have any interest in it personally. It's not like I'm fighting for myself in this. In a sense, I am, because for all of us as a community, we would be so much better if we were all concerned. So in that way, I'm fighting for myself, but it's more for the people that I've met. Like in Milwaukee, we met Billy and his wife, and Billy and his wife are both work full time, but for minimum wage. And so it takes all their salary to just put a roof over their kids' heads. And their two boys were growing like mad, so they used food stamps to feed the kids during the day and then went to St. Benedict the Moor dining room at night. And it's those kinds of folks that Paul Ryan says shouldn't get food stamps. Well, if they're not making enough wages, then, I mean, that's just wrong that they shouldn't eat. And so either raise minimum wage, which is something that we're working on, or make sure the safety net is strong enough so that these working people can support their families, especially their kids. So I think those are just good stories, and people respond to that.
We'll go to your calls now for Sister Simone Campbell. We've got Lori in Hales Corners on the line. Lori, hi.
Hi. This is such an honor. Sister Simone Campbell, you are so important to us, and so is Network, and so is Wisconsin Public Radio. And I am here to say that we really need to hear you and do something. Not enough of us are stepping up and doing what we need to do. And why are we here in the first place? We're here because we're all individual creations, beautiful creations, but we're not actualized, not until we work with each other to do that. So please, hang in there.
Lori, thanks for your call. And Sister Simone, that reminds me of the subtitle of your book, How All of Us Can Create Hope, Change, and Community.
That's right. That's right. I told my story just to try to jumpstart the conversation in our nation, where we each tell our story about how we came to what we value and then how values gets translated into politics. One of the things that I recommend is that we do what I call grocery store missionary work. When you're standing in line at the grocery store, instead of talking about, you know, the Green Bay Packers or something like that, the person in front of you or behind you, have you thought about immigration reform? Have you thought about our budget situation? Have you thought about safety net? Those important questions are the ones we should be talking to each other about. Now, one of the benefits of doing it at the grocery store is that the line never lasts too long. So if you get in a conversation that's a little heated, you know it's going to be over soon. But the important thing is that we develop community by having those tough conversations together. I've found all kinds of surprising answers. People are thinking about this, but we're not talking about it. That's the problem.
Thanks for the call, Lori. We'll go to Mike in Franklin now. Mike, hi.
Hi. I would personally like to thank Sister Simone Campbell. I am a Catholic grandfather, and I was brought up knowing what's right and wrong. And what's right is taking care. I've been lucky in my life. I've always had a job, and I want my taxes to go for food stamps, for unemployment insurance, and for health care for all Americans. That's what we all should be about. And we should not. That's why I actually am in Congressman Ryan's district, and I call his office all the time, and I express these same thoughts to him. And it's so nice to know that Sister Simone Campbell is fighting not only on my behalf, but on behalf of all the other Americans that feel this way and feel the right way.
Mike, thanks for the call. In just our last minute, Sister Simone, do you have another bus tour in the works, or what's the next item on your agenda?
Well, we've been working really hard in Washington, D.C. We're looking towards the fall, though, of going back on the road. I'm not sure. A bus is really expensive, so I'm not sure we'll have the bus, but we'll be back on the road, because the thing that we're really worried about in this coming election is the fact that we the people have got to stand up against big money, big special interest money in politics in the election system. So we're making some plans at this point. But what I'd really want to encourage everybody to do in Wisconsin is that you are having an impact in Congressman Ryan, because he held a hearing this week in D.C. about poverty, and he began to say that we need to come together. We need to solve these problems. It was the most open that I have ever heard him. So Mike's call, other people calling the office, you're making a difference. Keep it up. We have to now make sure that he takes the next step to action and ends his crazy budget ideas, but really steps out for what people need.
Sister Simone, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's a deep honor. Thanks.
That was Sister Simone Campbell, Executive Director of Network, a not-for-profit Catholic social justice lobby. She launched the Nuns on the Bus campaign. Her new book is A Nun on the Bus, How All of Us Can Create Hope, Change, and Community.
It's time for our state news roundup. From the latest on Wisconsin's controversial voter ID law, some big news there, to a look at the latest Affordable Care Act enrollment numbers in Wisconsin. Our regular news guy, Noah Ofshinsky, here in the studio to catch us up on the latest. Hey, Noah.
Hey, Veronica.
Well, I want to start with what's, I think it's fair to say, this is the biggest news story of the week. Wisconsin's voter ID law was struck down by a U.S. District Court judge. What do we know about her thinking?
Right. Absolutely. This was by far the biggest. This was the biggest story of the week. And U.S. District Judge Lynn Edelman struck down the very controversial voter ID law that has been hung up in court really for, well, more than a year. And the judge struck it down, saying that it disproportionately affects black and minority voters because they are less likely to have photo IDs.
And obviously supporters of the law, including Governor Walker, disappointed. But deeper than that, what is the reaction there?
Well, yeah, Judge Edelman found that, you know, there was no evidence of voter fraud. It was really a problem in Wisconsin. And, you know, that's the main reason why backers of this kind of law wanted to pass it, to prevent voter fraud. And Governor Walker, who is a big supporter of voter ID laws, says in defense of that, you know, even if one illegitimate vote is cast, that's one too many. So, you know, voter fraud may not be a big problem in Wisconsin, but even if there's one, Governor Walker says that's too many because it might cancel out a legitimate vote. And so the governor, as well as other GOP leaders here in the state, are anxious to appeal the ruling.
Well, how does this ruling compare with rulings on voter ID laws in other states?
Right. So Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen has vowed to challenge this ruling in the Seventh Circuit in the U.S. Court of Appeals in Chicago. And what's interesting is that this particular appeals court has weighed in on this issue before. It upheld a voter ID law that passed in Indiana several years ago.
The same court.
It may be different judges. You know, they're picked at random, mm-hmm. essentially. So we won't know if it's the same judges, but it's the same court. The question will be, you know, is Wisconsin different than Indiana? Will these judges find the legal basis of Edelman's ruling somehow more compelling than what may have happened in Indiana? You know, time will tell.
So will other laws fall based on Wisconsin, or Wisconsin come into line with other laws that were upheld?
Well, this was a very interesting ruling, and it's one that some legal experts say other people who want to strike down voter ID laws elsewhere around the country, it may be an argument that could be used again. We'll have to see about that.
Now, Governor Walker had been saying he wanted this in place by the November elections. What is the likelihood of that right now?
Right. So both the governor and the Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald says that it's not going to happen. They're not going to call back lawmakers in order to amend the law so that it's in place for the November election. Judge Edelman in the ruling said he didn't see a way the law could be amended that would satisfy his concerns. And any new voter ID law has to be approved by him. So I think the governor, as well as backers of the law, you know, see bringing back the legislature as more or less a futile effort, you know, at least for now.
So the thing to watch is the appeal and then whatever happens then.
Exactly. That's the next step.
All right. Well, from election law to health care, we have some numbers in for Wisconsin enrollment in the Affordable Care Act. What is the latest there?
Right. So the federal government released their latest numbers of the people who signed up on the online marketplace. And in Wisconsin, nearly 140,000 people signed up.
And how does that break down? Do we have any more depth of information about it?
Sure. So here's some interesting demographical data about the numbers of folks that signed up. 55% of those who signed up were women. Nearly a third were older, between the ages of 55 and 64. Most enrollees on the exchanges were white. 6% were African American, and about 3.2% were Latino.
Okay. And as we've been hearing all along, young people were kind of the brass ring of this. It was, you know, if young people sign up, this thing can float. What do we know about how many young people signed up?
Right. So the system depends on having a certain number of healthy people to sign up in order to keep the system stable, keep premiums low, that sort of thing. And about 26% of enrollees were younger here in Wisconsin.
Do you have a sense about it? Is that a big number? Is that enough?
Well, officials with the Office of Health Reform say they expect premiums to remain stable. They say the risk pool is both big enough and diverse enough as far as age to keep prices where they are at. not only in Wisconsin, but across the country.
All right. Interesting stuff there about Wisconsin and the Affordable Care Act. And I want to shift now to some news about immigration, at least at the grassroots level, not, you know, in Washington. But there was a march in Milwaukee yesterday calling for immigration reform. What was that scene like?
Right. So around 1,000 people marched in Milwaukee yesterday demanding immigration reform. There were two big themes. I mean, there were many, but two real big themes. The crowd, among other things, demanded that the Obama administration deport fewer people. Under his administration, deportations have really skyrocketed.
And how does that compare when we look at, you know, other presidencies in recent memory?
Right. So under the Obama administration, deportations have reached close to 2 million at this point. So to put that in perspective, Veronica, George W. Bush deported that many in two full terms. So Obama still has 2 years to go in his final term. So it's certainly fair to say that deportations have skyrocketed under Obama and will certainly end up being much higher in number than were done during George W. Bush's administration.
Okay, so activists looking at that number, they're not liking it. And it sounds like they also wanted some movement from Washington. Where does that stand?
Yeah, the other big demand, as it has been basically for years now, is that Congress finally act on immigration reform, more specifically, a path to citizenship. You know, to say that this effort in Congress has stalled, I think at this point, would be an understatement. You know, it's an election year. So any big policy issues, and I think immigration is certainly a big policy issue, you know, it will likely see very little traction this year just because it's an election year.
Yeah, we see little fits and starts and someone will say maybe, but then it seems as though it stalls out ultimately. And it sounds like you think ultimately it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, during an election year, I think it's going to be an uphill battle, to say the least.
And there's also a new law that affects investigations when police are involved. This was signed recently. What changes with this new law?
So before the last legislative session ended, lawmakers passed and the governor signed a law that requires outside police agencies to investigate police-involved shootings. And this law was tested for the first time, actually twice, this week.
Twice in this week already.
Yeah, there were two such cases. 31-year-old Dontre Hamilton was killed by police in a city park in Milwaukee on Wednesday after he, according to police, started to beat the officer with his baton. It's being investigated by the DA, Milwaukee Police, and the Department of Justice. Another case just happened yesterday in Dane County. A man was killed by Dane County sheriffs after he stabbed two officers in the leg. In that case, UW Police, City of Madison, Sun Prairie, and Fitchburg are going to handle that investigation. So already, this new law being tested here in Wisconsin.
So clearly there's some application we've seen already. It's a new law. So
yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it works out, and we'll certainly find out as both of these investigations progress.
All right, we're going to switch and pivot over to the natural world right now. We have some numbers on the wolf population in Wisconsin. What are we seeing there?
Yeah, so the other big news of the week is the state released its wolf population estimates. According to the agency, the Department of Natural Resources, there are a minimum of somewhere between 658 to 687 wolves statewide. In crunching the numbers, that means the population is down around 19% from last year's numbers.
Any word on why that is? Just natural fluctuations, rough winter?
Yeah, well, I mean, it could be any number of variables. But, you know, these numbers are important because they show how the population is faring now that we have a wolf hunting season in Wisconsin. And, of course, these numbers help determine what the next quota is going to be for the next wolf hunting season.
And so given that context, what do they say? What do these numbers say to people about what that quota might be next year?
Well, according to the DNR, these numbers are within the range researchers had expected when the DNR established last year's quota. So at least according to the DNR, these numbers aren't unexpected. The DNR board is going to vote on this year's quota recommendation in June, and I'm sure there will be some discussion of these numbers.
All right. Lots to chew on there this week. Noah, thank you so much for coming by.
It was good to be here. Thanks, Veronica.
We have been talking with Noah Ovshinsky. He's been in here in the studio with us today, and he also joins us every week at this time to catch us up on state news in Wisconsin.